Welcome to another episode of Acts of the Blood God, an independent RPG podcast. I'm your host, Kat Bailey. Joining me, as always, my lovely co-host, Nadia Oxford.
Hello, Kat. Happy Pride. Remember to stand for the Pride flag and kneel for the Animal Crossing.
Happy Pride, Nadia. It's a beautiful, rainbowy day, indeed.
It is. It's actually a very nice day out here.
Also joining me is my equally lovely co-host, Eric Van Allen.
As my first act of allyship this June, I have learned.
Yay!
HOTTOGO. You can take me hot to go.
Wow.
Wow. Well done.
You're ready for the recital.
I'm out here trying to help out. And the chat instantly knows. Good job.
You have ended.
We have really fostered a community here.
Yep, it's June. And in addition to being Pride Month, that also means it's Events Month. And we just had our first big event of the past week. Well, big-ish. That was Sony's State of Play. We'll be recapping that. We'll also be talking about Summer Game Fest. We'll be doing our Xbox preview. We'll be previewing all the stuff that's going to be coming up in the next week and what our plans are for Acts of the Blood God, in addition to everything else that we always do during this podcast. It'll be a great time. But first, if you enjoy the show, please support us. Your generous support allows us to do this. You can get the show ad-free, and you can join our Discord for just $1 a month. It's over on Patreon, patreon.com/bloodgodpod. We also do streams on twitch.tv/bloodgodpod. Like and subscribe. It would be really helpful and really nice. We do this every single Saturday. Lately, we've been doing it at like 9:30 a.m. Pacific.
Yeah, sorry about that.
But nominally, we start closer to 9:15 thereabouts and go for a couple hours. We like to also stream. Sadly, I'll be on the road for the next few weeks, so I don't think we're going to be doing This Week in GeckoCon for a couple weeks, but I will be back and I will continue to be playing. I'm still going. We're doing well. We're into June in This Week in GeckoCon, so that's very exciting. We've made it to the next level of the big tower and everything, so go check that out. We have merch at shop.bloodgodpod.com. Get your t-shirts. We got a cool Pride t-shirt and a cool Pride mug if you want to celebrate Pride in style. So go check that out over on the shop. And a few other housekeeping items. First of all, Pantheon of the Blood God, the vote is complete. And we are doing OG month, True Pioneers, which means we're playing Wizardry, Proving Ground of the Mad Overlord.
Oh, boy.
I think I named that correctly. I'm always struggling with that one. It's Wizardry 1. It was remade recently by Digital Eclipse. It's available on Steam and Nintendo Switch, interestingly enough. JB was over in the chat telling us all about the kind of wild mechanics like aging in Wizardry. So
why do I gotta age in games?
Why do I gotta age? You can't rest, say, you'll get old.
Keep politics out of games. I'm like, keep aging out of games. I don't need to know that I'm getting
keep my old creaking bones out of video games.
Aging, starving.
Your wizard needs ibuprofen.
Your wizard has ulcers. I can't take
ibuprofen. My back. We'll be playing that all this month over on the Discord, over on our monthly club chat. We're also going to be recording our Pantheon of the Blood God on Monday at around 5-ish p.m. Pacific, and we'll be doing 13 Sentinels Aegis Rim, which I am frantically trying to finish because I'm told that I absolutely have to finish it in order to be able to talk about it. So I'm getting close. I'm almost there. We can make it. And finally, we will be recording an episode for during Xbox in Summer Game Fest and all that. It won't be live, but basically Michael Higham, Eric, and I will be gathering in a hotel room and sharing all of our thoughts around a microphone. However, Eric, you have some plans. You'll be on the ground. What are you going to be doing? Tell me all about it.
Well, I mean, obviously, we're going to be there playing some games and stuff like that, talking to some folks. And as part of that talking to folks, I am going to conduct two different things. So on one hand, I've got a couple of developer interviews lined up with some really great teams. Not talking about those yet because I, you know, embargoes and things like that. But I've already got at least, I believe it's three really good ones lined up. Maybe gonna have more. It's kind of up in the air, but I will try to commit to three right now. In what way that pans out, we will see. But I think one of them at least is going to be very exciting for the folks at home who like their smaller games. I did try to focus on like generally smaller games. Cat is going to be seeing a lot of like the big AAA stuff. I'll see some of it, but I wanted to make sure we also took some time to go see some of the like smaller stuff that is going to be at SGF, the indie devs and stuff like that, so we get kind of like a wide swath. I'm really looking forward to talking about a lot of that once we're there. Also, I'm just going to have my old trusty Tascam recorder, and I'm just going to run around SGF whenever I have free time or whenever I see people or whenever I'm at these, you know, events later and stuff like that, and be like, hey, you want to chat for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, be on a Blood God pod, just answer some questions about RPGs in general, RPGs in the industry. And then we also have a question bucket that you, the listeners at home, can contribute to if you are a backer of our Patreon at any level. You can access both the Patreon page or the Discord where the link for the Google form is, and you can submit questions, and these will be for anyone I can encounter. So that could be a developer, that could be a publisher, somebody who just works in the industry somewhere, a journalist, a personality, just whoever wants to talk into a microphone with me for like 5 to 10 minutes about RPGs. If you're listening to this and you're in the industry and you want to do that, come find me at SGF. I will have my Tascam on me at all times, prepped and ready to just record stuff on the fly. We want to just make it a big chat and kind of use it as a reason to both kind of have some fun talking about RPGs at SGF. And also kind of like, it's like a time capsule almost, right? It's like, where does the industry at large think that RPGs are at in the year 2024? How do they feel the industry is going? What do they want from RPGs moving forward? That sort of thing. I think it'll be a really fun time capsule and also a fun way to hear so many different voices that you folks at home might be interested in hearing about RPGs from in a quick flash fashion when we've got them available. So look forward to that. I think that's going to be really, really fun. And ask your questions in the question bucket. And I will have, I don't know about a bucket. I don't know how reasonable that's going to be.
Please make it a bucket. Just get a bucket that from
a
like
a literal the bucket.
I was thinking
store.
Like one of those pails that you get, like that kids take to the beach, like kind of like a brightly colored pail. Like,
oh,
'cause it's gotta
fun.
Be able to, it's gotta be like,
yeah.
I gotta carry it around all day. Right. So it's gotta
handle.
Be,
just
yeah.
drag the bucket up to a developer and be like, I have something to show you. And then dig into the bucket and be like, oh, it's a question from our audience.
It's like flapping because like
your
the attached shovel is like clapping against the side of it. I'm like, I've got something in my bucket.
I got something in my bucket. So that'll be a special that's going up, I think, on Wednesday or thereabouts. We got lots of cool stuff. So look forward to that, especially for our backers on patreon.com/bloodgodpod. All right. Let's talk about event season. It's happening. State of Play happened earlier this week, and it was a little light on RPGs. It was a little light on games in general, but we did see a few things. The big one is at least RPG adjacent, and that was Monster Hunter Wilds. Eric, Nadia, I forget. Are you Monster Hunter people, or am I the only one here who really enjoys that game?
I'm Mon Hunt curious, you know?
I'm Mon Hunt curious.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm extremely pro Mon Hunt, but I'm just not very good at the gameplay loop. But I do love the world and the monsters. And I love Monster Hunter stories. Like, give me more of those games. I adore those.
Yes. So
I put about like, yeah. I put about like 20 hours into the 3DS one, I think it was, Monster Hunter 4 something.
Yeah.
I don't think I finished it, but I got pretty deep into the campaign for that. And I liked it. I thought it was fine. It cramped my hands. And then I went to World, I kind of struggled with. I don't know why. I think it just wasn't the type of game I wanted at the time. But then when Rise came out, I also kind of struggled to get into it single player. And so I kind of let it like languish on my Switch for a long time. And then a friend was like, oh, hey, like, let's hunt together. And I was like, oh, since we're hunting together, I can kind of use whatever weapon I want. Cause when I'm hunting solo, I kind of want to have like something that I can handle stuff with. But when we were hunting as a team, I was using the, it's like a big gun, basically just a big artillery cannon. And number one, love big gun. Big fan of big gun. Number two, I think that game is incredibly more enjoyable once you have other people playing with you. And 1,000%. That was what kind of like makes unlocked sense. That game for me. So now I get it. And now I'm excited for Wilds because I'm like, oh, now I have like a really good reason to want to get into these games. And people are kind of broadly more playing these games too. So I'm really looking forward to Wilds.
Yeah, yeah, you really want a group.
Yeah. We should do a group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'd be fun.
Let's do that.
Yeah, so I've played since Monster Hunter World, and I also played a lot of Monster Hunter Rise. I must have put like 200 hours into Monster Hunter Rise. Wow. And I did everything in the original release, and then for whatever, I made a mistake. You shouldn't do everything in the base game. You should finish the story in the base game, and then you should wait for the inevitable expansion, and because that's where the actual game starts. It's like getting to the end of the story, but then all of the end game content is reserved for the expansion. It actually kind of drives me crazy. It takes a whole year to get all of the end game content. So this time around, I'm going to finish the story and be like, okay, I'm done. I'm not going to grind anymore.
I'm waiting.
It's cool. Because inevitably, all of your hard-won equipment becomes useless, and you have to get all new stuff for the expansion. It's crazy. But I've played with the longsword, pretty technical, pretty hard to use. I've played with the greatsword, enjoyable. I've played with the switch axe, also enjoyable, though a little repetitive. I had fun with the bow. And I think this time around, so I try a new weapon every time, and I'm thinking I might go for the gun lance this time around, or I'll just go back to the great sword because the great sword is always a blast and you can't go wrong with that one.
I always use the daggers. I'm a daggers person.
Yeah.
You're twin a daggers blades. Person.
Yeah.
Twin blades was mine build. In the 3DS version, and I think when I played World, but then there was one that always interested me but seemed like way too big brain for me, the insect glaive.
Yeah, that is that, so weird.
That always seemed really cool, and I wanted
very
to try
advanced,
it.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Pretty advanced weapon, a little hard to use, but pretty good. Sadly, I'm the one who always carts at least once in Monster Hunter, and people get very judgy if you cart.
Yeah. Yeah. You're Dragoon. That's fine. Somebody's got to tank the floor.
I know. Inevitably the monster will run me down and I'll get knocked over awkwardly. And then that moment when you get sent back to camp, you're like, damn it. You screwed up.
I'm the best hunter in the world.
I have a lot of people I'm going to be playing Monster Hunter Wilds with. So looking forward to that one. Probably going to be early-ish next year. I expect we'll be getting a release date during Summer Game Fest and or during the Xbox Direct, because Capcom is already teasing more during Summer Game Fest from the director and such. So I'm sure we'll be getting a lot of details, a lot of monster debuts. We haven't actually seen that much. We do know that all 14 weapons are returning. We know that there's something called a focus mode, which will allow you to more easily target monster weak points and things
and
like
you
that.
You ride on a raptor.
You ride on a cool raptor instead of a dog. I kind of miss the dog,
but I like the raptor.
I like the dog. The raptor's all right. I'm team pup. Your character's apparently fully voiced, which I thought was interesting. And I'm wondering if that means that they're going to have more of a story bent in this one. Because Monster Hunter World did have an unfortunate story of imperialism. So we'll see how this ends up going. But so Monster Hunter Wild, we'll learn a lot more during SGF. Some other things during State of Play, Path of Exile 2 confirming a PS5 release date. And other people were saying Xbox, but I wasn't actually able to find official confirmation of Xbox. It's releasing into early access in late 2024, Path of Exile 2. Eric or Nadia, do you plan on playing Path of Exile 2?
No.
Eric is shaking his head. You don't want hardcore Diablo.
I don't even play normal Diablo. I don't know. Those games, I do like. I like Diablo 2 a lot, but I'm going to say something controversial. Last time I was on, I went on my Kingdom Hearts rant and people were yelling at me, and I know I'm right. So, like, you can't hurt my feelings, but
why are you booing me? I'm right.
Now I'm Eric gonna say is that something cat else. That those ladies are yelling at.
And we'll say something else a little controversial. I think of all the genres, barring maybe two, that have fallen the most prey to the games as serviceification of stuff, like Diablo is pretty high up there. Like I look at Diablo 4 and everything is like seasons and gotta grind the seasonal character and do this and do that, and it reminds me a lot of the like battle pass mentality that like just wears me out of every live service game right now, except for one. Shout outs to Final Fantasy 14, but I just get like really exhausted by that stuff. And so I see it in Diablo and I'm like, I'm sure there is probably a pretty good game there, but like that's the presentation that's being given to me, and clearly they're catering to the people who want that. I'm happy for them, but that's not really what I want. I just want to like log on and like play my necromancer and throw flesh golems at people and stuff like that and just kind of vibe and get like a cool creepy story. And so
I mean, now it's on Game Pass.
Now it's on Game Pass, I might actually try it. I think that's also the flip side of it for me. So maybe I will try it and see if it does that. But like, it does feel like that stuff feels so easy to just live serviceify and turn into that like constantly evolving thing that like Destiny and other games are, that just end up eventually burning me out, that I just always stayed away.
Well, Path of Exile 2 is interesting to me for a couple reasons. First of all, maybe it's a little bit different from Diablo 4 in that Diablo 4 is all about the extremely broken builds. And I think Path of Exile 2 is maybe a bit more action focused. It still has the complicated builds and everything. But in particular, they really are putting a premium on things like the dodge roll and stuff like that. Yeah. And in that respect, it actually reminds me a little bit maybe of Hades? Question mark.
So it kind of reminded me of that too when I was looking at it.
Yeah, so that instantly makes me more interested. And historically, I think they've kind of gone out of their way to try and avoid the live service grind. Now, people who spend a lot of time playing Path of Exile can now yell at me and tell me that I'm wrong. But historically, they've handled things very differently from your bog standard live service game in terms of battle passes and whatnot. I don't even think they have a battle pass, question mark. But generally speaking, people have been pretty happy. They have like a whole in-game economy, which I found pretty interesting. But generally speaking, the people who run Grinding Gear games, it's obvious that they really love games, and one of their like guiding lights has always been to make a really good game and not to screw over players, and not necessarily thinking in terms of pure monetization and whatnot. And I think it's taken them a very long way, and that's why Path of Exile is so popular. So I think Path of Exile 2 could end up being very popular when it comes out. Two more games. There's Ballad of Antar, a free-to-play dark fantasy action RPG from Infold Games, which I don't know, like action RPG by way of The Last of Us. People extremely call it an escort game.
Genshin Impact, darker, grittier.
Let's throw some games out there. Genshin, Last of Us.
Yeah, that's two nuts and gum finally together at last.
Ellie, I rolled an SSR. This one's glowing gold, Ellie.
You get a one of those like mushroom corpses with a bikini. The SSR pulls. Sexy.
And then there's Where Winds Meet, which is headed to PS5. And I've described it as kind of another sort of Soulsy game, maybe potentially with pretty dense RPG mechanics. Artistically fairly pretty, but maybe more mobile first. So it might have a little bit of that jank going on, but it's gotten some hype. It's been doing pretty well in terms of the interest over at IGN, at least. But have y'all even heard of Where Winds Meet? And is there literally any interest in these, like, sort of series of games that, I'm sorry to say, look very similar to one another, are clearly trying to go for the open world Souls audience?
It's a lot of those games recently that I feel are like, I call them Lords of the Fallen likes, because it doesn't even feel like they're going, I mean, they're going for Souls, but Souls is so disambiguated from what it originally was at this point. Even FromSoft is not really making Souls anymore. They're making open world Souls. They're making very like Zelda 1 inspired Souls. Shout outs. I cannot wait for that DLC. But like, everyone has been trying to do Souls so much that it has more become a like, it went from being we're trying to imitate one game to we're trying to work within an established genre space, the same way that, like, you know, games like Rogue Legacy and stuff like that kind of set up an idea, or even your Metroidvanias and things like that, where it goes from like, okay, this is, you can clearly see that this is like a Castlevania game, to now it's like, oh, there's like vague ideas of what a Castlevania or a Metroid would be, but like we're kind of working within so many like disambiguated stretches of the term that we're now like way out in the weeds on what this is. And that's what a lot of these games remind me of. Like Lords of the Fallen was, we made Souls, kinda. And it's there, I guess. And I haven't played the newest one. I'm talking about like the first one, which I was obviously not like a huge fan of. But a lot of these games are just kind of popping up. I keep getting contacts for them and reach outs. So I'm always like, I'm sure y'all probably have some good ideas and stuff like that, but it feels very like we are just trying to do Souls in the aggregate almost. Like I want to see something at this point, same with the Metroidvania or other like really overly done genres at this point, where you've got to have that like X factor. What is the thing that makes you different from everybody else doing this? Because there are so many people doing this, and you do have to have something a little bit more original than we're doing a Souls. So if they got that, club in their bag, maybe I'm interested, but I've seen a lot of games recently that don't have that club in their bag. So
truly, there's so many of these types of games, and I'm sure that they're very good. There's also Phantom Blade Zero. They always are eye-grabbing, and then they kind of come and go a little bit because they lack that certain special something-something that you tend to get out of a From Software game. But so that's pretty much the state of play from an RPG's perspective. We also got an announcement for Astrobot, which I think definitely got the most hype out of everybody. Eric is
it
like,
does look,
let's go. Nodding
at that's really cool. I like the original. It was more of a tech demo, but even that was very charming. And it's just, Sony is so up its own ass that it's nice to see it like having fun with its old franchises again and referencing like, hey, it's Parappa the Rapper. You're never going to get a new game, but at least you remember him. Not everything is The Last of Us. And it looks a little Mario, 3D Mario world-ish, and that's fine, I guess, if you're going to steal from the best. So this should be fun. The only thing I'm worried about is I know for a fact that this is going to screw up my controller so badly, which already has drift problems, but it'll be worth it. HD Rumble.
Yeah, I'm going to finally turn all my haptics and stuff back on just for this game and this game alone, because I trust Asobi to do it right
it
and not break my triggers.
It is worth blowing up a controller for.
Yeah. I never played Astrobot Rescue Mission, the one for VR, but I did love the tech test, Astro's Playroom for the PS5, and that really made me love. I think for years, Sony has wanted its equivalent of like the nostalgia franchise, because
absolutely.
Nintendo has stuff like Smash Brothers, where they can be like, look at our lineage, or even Mario Kart, I think you can consider in the same vein at this point, where it's like, they get to just use their lineage, their franchises, to build something new and kind of, you know, largely appeal to people based on the idea that like you get to play as all these characters that you know and love. Sony has tried that before with stuff like PlayStation All-Stars, and I don't think it really worked for a myriad of reasons. But when I was playing Astro's Playroom, somebody who, you know, I do have probably more console history with Sony than most others. And I was sitting there like, the little cameos were great. The hardware stuff they do where they like incorporate the actual hardware of the PS5 was really, really neat, where you are going through levels that are the GPU and things like that. Then also you're getting collectibles that are old Sony peripherals and consoles and pieces of history. And it looks like a lot of that is returning because we see like, you know, shots in that trailer of all the little Astrobots carrying around pieces of Sony memorabilia and stuff like that. And obviously the part where he rides a PlayStation 5 into space and stuff like that. The cute little Journey bot was adorable. I loved all the little the Kratos bot and all that. And I hope they don't play too front center. Like, I really like that they were just fun cameos. They don't need to be coming in there and like trying to make a story about how all these bots and stuff are doing. I like the idea that it's a bunch of bots that are doing cosplay. Like, that's more fun to me. That's more enjoyable. But I love Astrobot. I think as somebody who doesn't usually go for a 3D platformer, Astro's Playroom was perfect. It was the right length. It was the right amount of like doing something new, using it, and then ditching it and moving on. And I honestly, in a year that Sony needs something, because they don't have a lot on deck right now. They have not announced a lot. They have some stuff like further out, but not a lot.
Here's your temple game, Sony fans.
And I think the Concord announcement went really, really bad.
Did not go well.
I tweeted, we have Guardians of the Galaxy at home. That took off a bit.
It was like the opening was, here's this whole story thing about the Guardians of the Galaxy type thing that they're doing that felt very like, we saw Marvel. We know what Marvel does. And then the second they're like, this is a 5v5 hero shooter, I was like, well, I'm out. Like,
they announced it five. This was clearly something that was greenlit like 6 years ago.
Yeah.
And they're like, back when the MCU was hot and people wanted hero shooters. And now it's finally here, and the MCU is decidedly not hot, and people are not into hero shooters. Memo to PlayStation, it's all about the extraction shooters now.
I told a friend, I was like, this is like the video game in an esports episode of an ABC procedural that you see that they're all playing. Like, it cuts to a screen, and they're like, yeah, that's Timmy Jenkins. He's the greatest Concord player in all of North America. And it's like just showing gameplay of that. Yeah.
Gas game.
And then Ice-T is like, oh, so you mean like.
Maybe
it'll be okay.
There's a cult that ruins their mind.
I don't know. I'm dunking on it.
I'm a bad father.
I think the thing about it is like that game just looks like it's already like something we've seen before, something we know already. I had someone ask me on Twitter or something. They're like, don't you play it? Like, how many hero shooters can you play right now? When was the last time you played a hero shooter? And I was like, well, Overwatch, but like Foam Stars just came out. And
Star Wars,
do you remember that Foam Stars came out?
Is Foam Stars a hero shooter?
Yes.
Would you call that
it's
a hero
a Splatoon
shooter?
Yeah, it's a Splatoon game, but you play
would
as
you
hero
call Splatoon
characters
a hero
that have
shooter?
Well, no, okay, it's styled like Splatoon, where you have like the foam and stuff, but the characters you play have individual abilities that are like an ult and a Q and an E, quote unquote, like your kind of basic abilities, and then an ultimate, and you play specific characters for their specific abilities to do hero shooter things. So like, I would absolutely classify it as a hero shooter.
I don't care about Concord, and I won't play it, but having said that, I might surprise some people. If it turns out to be good, I think people have been sort of starved for a new shooter experience for a while now, because Fortnite and Call of Duty and all the usual suspects have been around for freaking ages, and the new games that keep coming out keep ending up being disappointing. So it may actually end up hitting in a way that we don't expect, or it'll completely crater and everybody will forget about it, and that will be that.
I think the main thing it's going to run into is that within that showcase, there was another hero shooter in Marvel Rivals. So not only was it like, okay, here's two hero shooters in the same showcase.
Is that a hero shooter or a hero fighty fight game?
It's a hero. It's everybody in
it's
that
like
game.
It's like third person action, but it's in a hero shooter context.
A lot of them have guns or gun-like.
It kind of reminds me of remember that year that Overwatch kind of debuted alongside, what was it, Battle? They used an M83 song for their trailer.
Yeah, marathon. Marathon's coming down the pipe too, and like that, yeah. I think is supposed to be an extraction shooter, but I don't know for sure. That's me guessing. But
Battleborn.
I liked Battleborn.
See,
okay,
it was
Battleborn
different.
Was ahead of its time.
Yeah, Battleborn, that's the Simpsons meme. It's like
it
you got me Overwatch?
Alongside Overwatch, or it like kind yes. of like it had the same preview event, and everyone thought, well, they're the same game, but they weren't. But this is the same thing that's going on with the Guardians of the Galaxy game and the other one they showed,
Marvel Rivals.
Marvel Rivals.
Thank you.
Well, one's a first-party exclusive, I should point out, as opposed to Battleborn, which was from 2K or Take-Two or whatever. So there's a little bit of a difference there.
My point in bringing it up is that, like, I look at that and I'm like, cool, we've got stuff that we've seen before. We can pretty easily contextualize. We know what's up. Astrobot, fresh, fun, exciting. Like, really, I love seeing Team Asobi do anything. And I don't know, this year especially, like, we haven't even had that many AAA games, but I still feel a lot of, like, I don't know, I'm worn out on a lot of what Sony puts forward as its first party catalog. And so when they do something like Astrobot, I'm like, yes, please, like, do stuff like that. I get really tired of most other, like, third party games and stuff like that, or first party games from Sony, because they kind of all follow in a mold to some degree. Yeah. They're all stuff that feels very familiar to me, and Astrobot at least is something that we haven't had a lot of, and I'm very excited about. So
a lot of comments about how this feels like when Sony was still fun and still putting out fresh and inventive stuff before they closed Sony Japan Studio.
Yeah. God. Remember when Japan Studio was open? That was a great time.
Everything wasn't kind of a dour third person action game in which a big person is protecting a little person. Remember that? So
sad daddy games.
Sad dad games.
Third person. Hey, I'm in over the shoulder.
I'm here for Astrobot. It does. You were mentioning how it captures PlayStation nostalgia. Mm-hmm. And Sony's been trying to find what that means. Here we are. It's the nostalgia game. So.
Good luck to them.
Looking forward to that one. I'm less like excited than other people, but I do think it looks really joyful, and I think we've been looking for an uncynical, joyful game in this era of incredibly cynical dreck. And you contrast it a little bit with Concord, which does feel very cynical, very chasing the trends, versus Astrobot, which just has a very strong sort of identity. And I think that really speaks to people. So did you all see that story, by the way, about Pixar?
I just like, saw looking, that before coming on. Yeah.
About
doubling
Pixar?
Down on sequels and mass appeal. You're getting Finally. Incredibles 3. You're getting Inside Out 3. You're getting a Finding Nemo 3. All of the three.
Still can't find him.
Still can't find him. Little bugger got lost real good.
Freaking Nemo.
Dude, look on top of the closet. There he is.
They looked at the results of Turning Red, Luca, which came out during the pandemic era and didn't even get full theatrical releases.
Full theatrical releases, but they got great critic scores.
And then they looked at Lightyear, which was the cynical franchise movie, but tanked, and said, let's do more of that. It's like, let's do less autobiographical movies, and let's just go for the franchises.
Let's stop doing relatable movies. So it's the same thing they did with Star Wars, where they took out, like, instead of doing, like, complicated topics and talking about things and feelings, let's do dreck and slop. Shiny things.
Lobotomizing these franchises. So Andor was pretty good. But go back to our post show last week, where I held forth on Star Wars for quite a while. Did you listen to that one, Eric?
No, I saw the comments. I saw the response. I was like, I missed one hell of a post show, it sounds like.
It was me haranguing Logan for 30 minutes because he was like, I like the prequels. And I'm like, oh, you like the prequels, do you?
Yeah.
Oh, they're fun. I don't know. Yeah. We have now learned that things could get worse is what how I feel
that
about the
true.
Prequels.
They can. Have to look they at can. That way. Let's be very...
Although, Acolyte looks good. I am
Acolyte looks
cold
all right.
and dead inside, but Acolyte looks like it might be a fun time. Carrie Ann Moss can carry a lot, so...
We live in a dark and weird time, but we did get a Call of Duty X Gundam collaboration for some reason. Yeah. So,
how popular is Call of Duty in Japan?
I don't know why they're doing a Gundam collaboration, but it's the weirdest and dumbest thing I've ever seen. I just want to show it to 2010 Cat and be like, look what's happening in 2024.
I think it says a lot that the collaboration is like two very OG Gundams and like the Zaku yeah. and the RX-78, I think is what it's called, the original
yeah, and then
the
OG Gundam.
And then the Ariel. And that yeah. like says everything.
It'd be Cap, funny
are you
if
following
they did.
The Tumblr Wars?
The Tumblr Wars?
Oh no, is this a Super Hulock thing resurrected again?
A little bit. So there was, and chat, please correct me if I'm getting this wrong. There was a shipping turn. You know how GameFAQs used to have that, like, who's the coolest character ever and
yes.
stuff like that? That, like, Sephiroth
yes.
would always win or whatever. Mm. Tumblr was doing a shipping tournament that people could vote in, like, the best ships. And. A very famous supernatural ship, which was Castiel and Dean, Destiel was getting blown out by Mjorine and Suleta, the two girls from Mercury. And it was a huge thing because it was like, here is Tumblr, the place where Destiel famously just took over supernatural fandom, just dominated, and we found the silver bullet that can dethrone it, and it's the Witch from Mercury lesbians, and we love that for them. But it also goes to show that like this is like G-Witch got real popular real fast, especially in the West, but even in Japan, like it's huge. So the fact that the collaboration, even in a game like Call of Duty, was Ariel and then two others, I don't think that was just because that's the most recent Gundam thing or whatever. I think that was very much a recognition of like people go hype for the Ariel, go hype for G-Witch.
I love that Bandai Namco seemingly has no idea what they have in G-Witch, and they're like, those girls aren't gay.
They're
LOL.
Good friends. They're roommates.
Yeah.
They're just
yeah, Bandai Namco,
oh
to be
God,
clear, because
roommates.
The people who made that show, absolutely, I don't think we're unclear about the nature of their relationship.
They should do Gundam Wing. What is it? The one with all the gay kids. Gundam Wing. Was it just Gundam Wing?
Gundam Wing?
Are you just talking about Gundam Wing with all the boys?
Yeah. Just
yeah. yeah.
Make that the collaboration. Put all the cute pilots in there. It'll take off.
Let's go real 90s.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that.
I'm actually surprised they didn't have Gundam Wing and Gundam Ariel, because at least in the US, Wing is the nostalgic one.
Was
not for Call of Duty Bros.
Iron-Blooded Orphans feels more in line with Call of Duty. But
yeah.
maybe the RX-78 and the Zaku, it's a little bit of a weird choice. But then again, it is Bandai Namco dictating terms, and they're always going to go for
those
the
are
OG.
Classics, though. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. They're very like visually discernible for a reason. But I do think the Ariel is like one of the better like main Gundam designs we have seen in the last few mm-hmm. generations. So
yeah, it's all right.
I like the Ariel design and the yeah. Calibarn, but I don't think they would put the Calibarn in there.
I actually like the Iron-Blooded Orphans one. It's very different.
The Thunderbolt, I think. Yeah. You know what game I miss? Gundam mm-hmm. Evolution. Gundam Evolution was a really good video game, and I wish it didn't die.
It died.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that game.
I've actually been logging into Gundam versus Extreme versus Maxi Boost on my PS5 recently because it's just there. Sadly, nobody playing it anymore. And from what I can tell, the only way to get matches is if you go on a Discord
yeah.
and specifically ask people to go into rooms, or you go into the Japanese server and there's a full eclipse and things align just right and you might be able to get a match on console. So.
Planetary alignment, yeah. What did they
anyway,
call it when
that
all
was
the planets line up?
That was a digression. So let's look ahead to what to expect over the next week. June 7th, Summer Game Fest. And among other things, we can probably expect a fresh look at Dragon Age Dreadwolf. which is coming out. It's probably looking to come out sometime this fall based on how things are shaking out with EA's timeline. And it'll be a big moment for BioWare, which has been badly in need of a win for quite a while now. They got a big boost from Mass Effect Legendary Edition, but this is their first really new game since, what, Anthem? And, Oh, dear is right. And as we all know, Dragon Age has been had a pretty fraught development and has gone through many different iterations and at one point actually got canceled. So there's a lot to prove, I think, with Dragon Age.
Yeah, I as the BioWare person, maybe more so here than the most other people. I really feel like this is a big moment for BioWare in terms of like they have a lot of expectations put upon them for this, right? Like this is their quote unquote return to form. I know that Mass Effect is like further down the line, but Dragon Age Dreadwolf is what we're calling it, Dragon Age 4 is essentially like this has been in development for eons, eras at this point, and it needs to come out. We've barely seen anything from it, which has not been the most like promising thing on the like fan side of like they keep just every year either like remember Solus, he's gonna be the bad guy, and like we all played Inquisition a decade ago, we understand.
Our memories are dusty now, but we remember
they really need to do something with this, because I'm not crazy about this fact, but I'm also not like stupid enough to not realize this is going to happen. But like comparisons are going to get drawn to Baldur's Gate 3. Comparisons are going to get drawn to just about every other fantasy RPG out there. But like having a GOTY tier game that just came out that is like pulling from the same DNA that Dragon Age pulls from, which is the Baldur's Gate series, that's like stiff comparisons you're going to be put up against. Yeah.
Tough comps. It'll be interesting. And then on June 9th, we'll be getting Xbox. And maybe we'll see
my wedding anniversary.
Maybe we'll be seeing a little more. 24th. A little more Fable. I don't actually think we'll be seeing more Fable. The big rumors have been Doom, actually. And Gear 6. So if you like the shooters,
Gear 6.
Everybody.
Make a Gears RPG. Gears Tactics was kind of there, but like just make a Gears RPG where all the meat boys are in parties together and camping and stuff.
Camping, playing King's Quest or whatever. I like that.
Yeah. Dom, I'm playing Queen's Blood.
Black Ops, we'll be seeing a whole showcase about the new Call of Duty. Nobody listening to this podcast is apt to care about that. Or maybe you do. I don't know, but it's not the main subject of this podcast. And then we'll also be getting a Ubisoft Forward, which is happening on June 10th. And that's where we'll be seeing Assassin's Creed Shadow. We'll be seeing Star Wars Outlaws. We may be seeing a couple of other games. I personally, Star Wars Outlaws, I thought I was out. They keep dragging me back in. I'm actually kind of interested in this game, even though it's just going to be a Ubisoft open world game. You know, there will be lots of stuff on an overworld map, and the action will probably feel a little weird. But gosh darn it, I want to play it. It looks okay.
Looks all right.
It looks fine.
I think
just like
UAC
Ubisoft, everything looks like sort of looks all right.
Yeah, like I think the new Assassin's Creed looks pretty all right too. Like I'm vibing with the ideas they have for it. I'm also like very much in the mood for a big Assassin's Creed. I don't know if they've really talked much about how like what this is going to look like in comparison, whether it's going to be more Mirage, which was very like old school AC, or if it's going to lean more towards Odyssey and Valhalla, which are like those big, like overly grandiose ACs. But I could actually kind of go for one of those right now. I don't know. Like there's something about that, whatever they're putting in it. It's like a Crunchwrap Supreme, you know, it's like there's just a lot.
Now I'm hungry.
There's a lot happening in there, just like piled all in together. But man, when you want that Crunchwrap, that crunch wrap hits. So
it does. It does indeed.
And finally, there will probably be a Nintendo Direct probably at the end of the month. And we shall see. It might be something like Metroid Prime 4. Nintendo is really trying to squeeze the last little bit of blood out of the Nintendo Switch. And
I
the
think
Switch
Prime
really
4
tapped
is
out.
Be a Switch 2 launch. This is my prediction.
I hope Prime 4 is a video a game.
I'll take that bet, Nadia, and I will say that it will not be a Switch 2 launch. I think it will be on Switch.
Think so. It'll be like a big reveal for this year?
Yes.
Look at what they did with Samus Returns. That would line up.
Nintendo needs something this holiday. I mean, what are they going to put out otherwise?
Yeah, I mean, they already said that Zaya, whatever, Legends Zaa, is
Legends
like, that's a next year one, right?
Yeah.
That's a 2025.
We might get that.
I'm very happy to hear.
We might get that Wind Waker and Twilight Princess remaster that's been sitting in a warehouse for years, apparently, that people keep corroborating.
I swear
we might be
it's
getting
there.
Mother 3.
We might be getting that Fire Emblem remake that people keep talking about. And literally only I will be excited about that because I'm the Fire Emblem sicko here.
Well, is this like if we're talking about geology?
No, Eric, you lost
I
your credentials when you hated
what
on Engage.
When,
you're not
okay,
a Fire Emblem fan. You lost your credentials.
Okay, so I gotta buy into everything. I'm not allowed
yep.
to critique
the
series.
I
didn't
Fire
like
fan.
The best Fire Emblem in 10 years. Come on, man.
I love Engage.
I mean, if we're talking about the gameplay, sure.
Over here.
Yeah.
I will stand for Engage till I die.
Talking
that
about the
fun.
Gameplay, maybe.
It's a great game.
But...
We could. You can argue Engage or Three Houses, but it was a fantastic freaking game. So that's all. We've had this argument before.
I liked
before.
It very much. It was one of my favorites but, that year.
Nadia, you're my favorite.
I know.
It's like you and me. We've been doing
other.
This for almost 10 years now. Can you believe that?
Jesus Christ. I guess so.
Really, really dangerous to play favorites with the guy who's running the VMix right now. It's almost.
Oh,
there.
No.
As he sips his
doomed.
Tea.
Sips his tea. But that's none of my business. And then, of course, there will be several other streams. Day of the Devs, a Devolver Direct, a Wholesome Direct, Guerrilla Collective, PC Games Show, and such and such. The PC
and
Games.
And the others.
I mean, there's so many streams. It's ridiculous.
There
and they all have 20 billion games that just kind of wash over you over the course of like an entire week. And you go, that was a lot of games. And they're trying to be inclusive, but in not curating, they just end up burying the gems under tons and tons and tons of stuff that nobody will play, sadly. So
I will say that like... Not to like tease or anything, but like I've been playing some demos of stuff that's going to be coming out in Next Fest and as part of kind of the SGF stuff. Like there are a lot of companies that even they know that they're not going to be able to get a lot of like attention during the week of SGF. So right now they're sending out demos with like embargoes to just try and like, you know,
that's
get
a smart
in.
Idea. Yeah.
Get in while the attention is there and people want to hear about new games, but like try and thread the needle on like getting around some of the big games that we know are going to be there.
Yeah.
I've been playing some of those and there's some stuff in there that like there are gems, there are diamonds in the rough. I mean, some of them won't even surprise you. We've talked about them on this podcast before, but like I do think for stuff like you know, there's the Guerrilla Collective, the PC Gaming Show, the Future of Play is one that honestly doesn't get talked about very often, but it's a like Toonami themed direct where they explicitly go for games that feel like you would see on like bumper ads for Toonami and stuff like that. There's like that's always a good time. And I think they have confirmed that they are doing show this year. So like keep an eye out for those because you will probably find something somewhere in there that you'll like. And I do still feel like this is a year for great indies, great like tiny little games that are going to be not for everyone, not mainstream broad appeal. But if you see it and it like activates your neurons, you're like, yeah, that's my jam. And there's a lot of good jams like that out there.
I'm looking forward to it. Yeah.
Also, IGN's going to be hosting a live in-person event this year. IGN Live. It's going to be over at the Magic Box in Los Angeles. And it's going to be running from, I believe, June 7th to June 9th. Go check it out. You might see me there. I'll be around.
Oh my gosh.
I'll be going in and out. I'll be working on... I'll be in the dedicated workspace. Reb Valentine will also be there. They're going to be doing, there's going to be an NVC podcast. Who's his name? He runs Critical Role. He was Ganon.
Matt Mercer will be there.
Yeah. Doing IGN Arcade, which is pretty cool. They're going to be interviewing Phil Spencer, which is kind of a big deal. Yeah.
Do you guys want to put him up there and everyone gets a tomato? And they get
That's
one thing we didn't mention about Xbox. Yeah. Like the Xbox tone at the showcase and everything at SGF, that's going to be really interesting to see how they manage that.
Based on all the rumors that I've heard, I think Xbox will actually have a pretty strong show. I think people will come out of it going, wow, that was good. But maybe I'm wrong. We shall see. I've misjudged the mood in the past, and a lot of these games aren't the kind of games that I would play. So what can I say?
The Phil Spencer tomato show is a good idea. That would really cheer people up. Dance, monkey. Throwing pretzels and tomatoes at him. I'm Stan and I was wrong. I'm singing the Stan Wrong song.
Final thoughts on the upcoming slate of shows? Anything you're particularly excited to see? I'm excited to see Metaphor again. That's kind of my most anticipated game for the rest of the second half of the year.
Yeah, I'd like to see some Metaphor news, some more like details about that. Although I already feel like I've seen kind of what I need to see of that game, and anything left is just bonus.
Yeah.
I don't know. There is one. They recently confirmed that Sparking Zero Dragon Ball will be showing some more stuff off at SGF. And I am falling into the Sparking Zero hole. The Budokai Tenkaichi is back. So many Gokus, man, in this one.
All the Gokus.
The last trailer was like, here's Cauliflower and Kale, and then Goten and Trunks, and they're all fighting each other. And then, of course, they fuse. So now we have Kefla and Gotenks fighting each other. None of these words are in the Bible. And they're all doing their fun moves. Like Gotenks is doing the ghost attack and the volleyball volley with Piccolo. And Kefla has like the six spinning key discs that she has that she throws. And then they cut over to like Gogeta and Vegito and fuse Zamasu, like fighting each other. And the whole thing was just about, like, we've got fusion characters, but it just reminded me that, like, I don't know what it is, but there's something about smashing all these Gokus and Vegetas together that is, it's good. It tickles a part of my brain that just loves this stuff, and I'm very much in the mood. Like, I love Dragon Ball FighterZ. I don't think it's going to be nearly as in-depth or complicated or competitive as Dragon Ball FighterZ, but the Budokai games were fun because it was just everybody's here. We have so many Gokus, and you can make them all fight each other, and we're just going to lean into the fan service elements.
Can you make them
that
kiss?
Looks great.
No, that would definitely not be in the Bible.
There is one Dragon Ball game that had dating sim elements, and that was Dish. Yeah, it was only with the like female characters of the cast. So it was like Bulma, Videl,
16.
Chi-Chi.
Oh, she'd kill me, but I'd date 16 18. So fast.
16 is a different one. 18 is the one
I would
probably
date. 16.
18
though.
Has the blonde hair. 16
like
is the big guy.
Yeah, yeah, that guy.
Gohan. You
when
must
I was at actually
Cell.
my brother's birthday party, it was a whole big family gathering, and one of my brother's in-laws, like an older kid, like hadn't seen him in a long time. We start talking anime, and we start talking Dragon Ball. And it's like my parents were there and they thought we were talking a different language because I'm like, oh, I like Beerus this and Whiz that. And my mom's just like, I'm brain damaged already. What are you doing to me?
Well, that's it for our State of Play recap and our preview of SGF and Xbox. Next Monday, we will be recapping everything that happened over the weekend. So please look forward to that. And also please look forward to Eric's big SGF on the ground special, roving reporter Eric Van Allen. Okay, it's time now for a series of random encounters. Zenless Zone Zero will launch on July 4th for PS5, PC, and mobile. And honestly, I'm kind of looking forward to it. Aiden Chronicle. It's getting a patch. It will resolve the graphics settings problems. We'll be also getting more story expansions, various packs. Marissa, Sane, and Marcus will all get chapters. So if you're an Aiden Chronicle fan, that will be maybe a nice little injection of additional content. I don't know if they've fixed that quest that allows you to get every single character yet in the best ending.
I think they did.
They should probably fix that one if they haven't.
Yeah.
PlayStation 5 has apparently been Sony's most profitable generation to date. Good job to them. Cyberpunk 2077 development has finally finished. The Yakuza creator says the series was flat out rejected in its first proposal. And finally, Dragon Quest III HD 2D finally being teased again, could be coming soon for PS5, Xbox, Switch, and PC. That's Nadia's game of the year right there.
Let's go. Yeah. I don't know if it'll be hands-on at the show, but I'm jealous if anyone gets to play it. Because it won't be me. I won't be there.
I kind of want to just
play. Nadia, I'm bringing an extra bag. I'm just putting you inside. You're...
Okay,
don't worry.
I can fit.
Yeah, I put a layover in Canada. Yeah.
Like those little bag dogs. I mean, honestly, I just kind of want to play the fan-translated version for the Super Nintendo because I really like the graphics on that one. Also,
that's the first one I played, actually.
Also, some of the sickest box art on the Super Famicom.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe just a tiny, like 1% below the Dragon Quest V box art, which is the champion in my mind. But
there is a
really
rumor
high up there
that has been, that we're looking at, as Mango Ulz brings up here, there is a rumor that we're looking at Dragon Quest 1 and 2 as well as 3 here. Mm. I haven't heard anything from the tittle-tattle, but I'm not as plugged in as you guys. So I hope so. I would absolutely love a trilogy. And I mean, be fair, in the trailer that we saw, they mentioned Dragon Quest. Didn't say specifically 3, just something like The Legend Begins. So we'll see.
The thing I would say is that all of the rumors I have seen so far are very based upon speculation and assumption rather than somebody saying like I have a source or whatever,
right?
And I'm always going to caution, like, you know, not saying that it couldn't happen, I'm just saying like understand where your information comes from and set expectations accordingly. That is always, we're waving the pride flag for this.
Source is gay, therefore it's good.
You have confirmation. Dragon Quest is gay now.
You cannot play Dragon Quest unless you are gay.
It was
gay.
One of the fairly well-known leakers on Twitter. It was either
Midori.
Kiro or Midori.
It was
saying it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'd only seen people saying it because they were like, oh, they said the Erdrick legacy, and Erdrick is a thing from 1 and 2 as well. So that might.
But 3
if there's
is
a leaker
really
saying
the one focused
it,
around
it would
Erdrick.
Make a lot of sense because the original Dragon Quest 3 pulls a lot from the original Dragon Quest, so there's plenty to be gained from playing all three in a row. I think it's sort of the original trilogy, right, Nadia?
Yeah, it like, I'm not saying it wouldn't be easy. Obviously, it's game development. It's not easy. But if you have that engine in there and you're already basing it on games that have been done, and of course, you could do quality of life balances, but they do have a very strong basis. These are games that Japan has done, like, over 50 times, so they probably could do it all. Square can probably do it in its sleep at this point, but I would love to see a trilogy like with 1, 2, and 3. Watch them release it and make us buy all three separately.
Yeah, I was gonna say
that would be a very Square move.
Yeah, that would fit with the
especially after the Pixel remasters.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and
I'll buy it.
Oh, you will.
I'm scum. I'm capitalist scum.
I'm disgusting.
I hate myself.
I disgust even myself.
Standing at the line at like Best Buy being like, I don't enjoy that I'm doing this. That'll be $59.99.
She'll get the deluxe edition with the Erdrick statue.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
Like, I've got the giant Fire Emblem thing with like the fake NES cart and all that.
Oh, I got that too.
Cool, mm-hmm.
It's sitting on my shelf over there.
In our own way. I don't know if I've shown this off recently, but I have a original Final Fantasy XIV A Realm Reborn Collector's Edition acquired from Japan by my good pal Alex Van Aken, brought that over as a gift for me.
That's
a nice gift.
Yeah, yeah. It looks gorgeous up there. It's fantastic. We all have our vices, is what I'm saying. We all have our things that we go.
I do have a Graha Tia statue, so yes.
Ooh, a Graha.
My son.
We're now rolling into the tavern, settling down by the fire, talking about what we've been playing, what we've been watching. For me, we're heading into the Pantheon on Monday, and I'm trying to wrap up 13 Sentinels Aegis Rim. All of my characters are more than 50% complete in terms of their actual stories. Some are at 80%. I am like in the middle of wave 2 in the destruction mode. I have some theories about where the story is going, all things considered. I went and dropped in my theory. Huh? I went and dropped my theory into the game club.
Look at this.
Chat.
Read this.
And so we'll see. Who are some of my favorite characters in 13 Sentinels Aegis Rim as I've like continued to plug along? I'm gonna just look at, I can't remember any of their names for whatever reason.
Yakisoba.
There's some that
Angel.
I don't enjoy playing. So Nenji, very high up there. Like Nenji and his pompadour. Enjoy his story. Enjoy that he's randomly stuck in a train or something. Natsuno, S tier. Love Natsuno. I really like the Yakisoba Pan guy.
Yakisoba Pan guy is the best. I love him.
I want to try Yakisoba Pan now.
I like Sekigahara.
Sekigahara,
and his like being chased through time and space. He's cool. Yakushiji, very small, very low. Don't like her. Don't like her and the talking cat. Find those pretty annoying. Iori,
she's
pretty
weird.
Low down too. The having trying to figure out how to get through Iori's story. And also the Shinji character, Juro, like I got stuck in a circle doing Juro's story over and over again. And I was like, screw this. I hate this guy. He's a fucking nerd.
I think the Juro story has some of my favorite reveals, but I don't know if I like the sections of that as much as other characters. I definitely think Sekigahara is a really big one. I also really, really like the fighter girl, you know, the tough rough and tumble one. I like her. I also like
her.
The dude
Yuki, she's so cool.
The guy that shows up with her and just has completely unearned riz and just like lives his life, and he's just like, yeah, I'm gonna win you over, babe, I already know it. I'm like, I hated him at first and I was like, damn, you know, he's kind of winning
about
me over.
Shu Amaguchi,
yeah he wins.
He has
me
a motorcycle,
over a
doesn't he?
Yeah,
he has a motorcycle. He has the house with all the video game consoles, and I think it's just meant to be. Whenever they go in that apartment, it's fun just to look at all the details of the vinyl collection and the VCR and the big 80s TV.
Yeah,
with they're playing like Battlezone or something like that on it. You can see at one point they're playing a game on that screen, and I enjoy that.
This dude rules.
It's the story is ambitious. In some ways, I'm just like, just try and get through the story. Just try and get through the story, because it's an interesting story, and I want to unravel all of it. But it's also mildly exhausting to me because there's not a huge amount of interaction through it. So mostly I'm just enjoying the vibes and listening to the characters talk and going, oh, and more, I'm just picking a character and going through their story rather than jumping around a lot.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because there's more of an arc to it and there's more rising action as opposed to, well, nothing's much happening with this character. Nothing much is happening with this character. What's happening with this mystery here? As opposed to, as you get further and further into different characters, more and more interesting stuff starts happening. The Tomi story, Tomi Kisaragi with the red glasses and the braids,
Yes.
One of the more mind-bending stories out of all of them. I don't know what's real in that one.
Her stuff is all over the place. Yeah,
that's like,
I initially did not like her as a character, and I still don't know if I'm like wild about her as a character, but I think her story is the one that like messes with your head pretty frequently. Her and then the like very stern like student council president looking guy, the like classes guy who's always, you never get his chapters, and then like when one pops up you're like, oh, I just unlocked something, like something is gonna happen when he comes up. So
yeah, dick.
And so many of these stories are very seem
go-to.
Connected to some sci-fi trope. Mm-hmm. Like Tomi makes me think of Ex Machina in many ways. Juro's story starts off as sort of Evangelion-ish, but then goes into crazy identity stuff and what's going on with all of that.
And then you have E.T. There's an E.T. story.
There's a literal E.T. story.
It's so cute. There's a little bit of an E.T. story slash, what was it? From the 80s. There are a bunch of stories from the 80s.
Short circuits,
like batteries not included. Yeah,
that was cute. I think it was a
cute little story. Yeah, where they're protecting the little robot.
Yeah.
I will say a lot of 13 Sentinels feels like it was written by somebody who just had so much love for like the Macross Gundam, like 70s to 80s, like anime era, even stretching into the 90s. Like there is so much love for that time, and you feel it reflected in a lot of those different stories, even the ways that they play out, like the different tropes that they run into. Playing that, honestly, I think subtly is what started pushing me towards, hey, maybe this stuff is all right. And then y'all really like flip the switch when you made me do Summer of Gundam, and I was like, oh no, this stuff rips, this is really good. Now I'm just down the rabbit hole. But
good sci-fi. Well, I have a lot more thoughts on our Pantheon of the Blood God episode. Don't hate the destruction elements either. And in some ways I'm just kind of grinding through them. But there are like cool moments, like when Tomi or Natsuno launched the missile rain and you just get this giant coming
down
on everybody.
Love a good saturation attack.
It's so satisfying. Just a fun pretty game. Cool. I just like the fact it exists.
I like it's the pretty. Move that some of the close so quarters combat units have, where they like basically get a buzzsaw out and you just literally see their icon go like, and like literally just tear through a mech. It's so good. Yeah.
There are moments when this game is straight gorgeous, like when the characters are standing and you see a sentinel come in the background and punch a kaiju.
Yeah.
And it feels enormous. The robots feel huge. And I always love that kind of Godzilla Evangelion feel where the mechs genuinely feel imposing. And I think 13 Sentinels,
they have
despite
good weight
what seems
them.
Like limited resources in some ways, I think it captures that really well. So Pantheon of the Blood God, it's going to be happening on Monday. I'm going to try and finish up 13 Sentinels this weekend. I don't think I'm that far away.
Ultimately. You said you're at like wave two,
middle of wave two.
Is there four waves? I don't remember how many waves there are.
Middle of wave two, all of the characters above 50%, some at 80%.
So you're getting there.
I'm just trying to get to the point where at least one of my Yakisoba Pong guy is locked behind having to have like eight characters at 80%. I'm like, I want that guy's story though.
Yeah.
He's fun.
The end of that one might be like one of the last story scenes you do, if I remember right, because there's a lot that happens in that one specifically.
And I mentioned
it's peak. So good.
I mentioned that Natsuno is one of my favorite characters. It's a sporty track girl. Mm-hmm. But I did a lot of her story, but then it was locked for quite a long time behind getting past Battle 5 and Wave 2. And finally I got through it. Now it's like, okay, now I can do Natsuno's story again. But now I'm just trying to get everybody else's story up too. So I'm about ready to go back to her story at this point.
I would say you've got one more big wave of destruction stuff. So you're about probably 2/3 of the way through the game.
Okay. Well,
but I think it's also very finishable from where you are. So
yeah,
it got a lot. I got a lot to play, but I've been cranking through it, just trying to play as much as I can on my Steam Deck via remote play. So it's been a good time. It's great for Steam PS5 remote play. All right, Eric, what have you been playing?
Oh, I don't know. I hit a point where I was like, I just need something in my life that is not work. And so I, for some reason, chose Final Fantasy 14 for a bit. So I've been playing a lot of 14. Because the things I'm doing in 14 feel like work, because it's a lot of tribal quests, which is just running around and turning stuff in, doing busy work for Moogles and dwarves and stuff.
Oh, you haven't finished those? You got some good shit if you finished those.
Oh, no. I'm working towards my rank 8 on the Moogles because I need that for a triple triad card. I also need rank 8 on the dwarves, and I'm only at like 3 right now.
That's a good story.
I'm doing custom deliveries to build up my crafter and gatherer, so like that's an additional thing entirely. Just a lot of stuff where every day I'm kind of logging on and doing some, like, you know, upkeep stuff to try and keep these meters going up, but I find it very relaxing to do.
Yeah.
I also like that I talked earlier about the battle pacification and all that, and one thing that I like is that I don't lose progress if I stop. So yeah. Like I went traveling this last weekend, and it's not like the game was like, oh, you stopped logging in or you lost your streak, so you have to like start over again, or your like gains are not as good as they could have been if you were logging in every day. Instead, it's just like, do it when you feel like doing it. And like, yeah, there are some resets and some timers that they have built in that I sometimes get a little bit frustrated with. I wish I could just like blast through tribal quests, and having to do them like daily is a little frustrating. I think like I do kind of wish that Square would say like after a certain point, you know, after an expansion's been out long enough, or maybe like a certain number of X packs back, they say no more tribal quest limit for certain, like maybe, you know, we're going into Dawn Trail, say like up through Stormblood or something, like you don't need the limits anymore, because the limits kind of exist to be like, okay, this is something you can do while you're doing other stuff, and like you can kind of visit it. And I think some of the limits are not great, but on top of that, people got me into the Wondrous Tales, which is a whole different way of just like there's so many ways that like if you manage all of it, you can get so many resources out of the things that you would just normally do in 14. And in some ways, I do find that exhausting because there's a lot of it to do and keep track of. But it does mean that I can kind of opt in or opt out. It's never really ruined my experience to not have all the free stuff, but having some free stuff or just having reasons to go do like. So last night I logged on. I was with some friends of the show. You know, Andrew Sheeran, who is my coworker at Destructoid, does a lot of our 14 coverage, is an absolute 14 sicko. Matt and Kate from But Why Though. We just started running like trials and like unsynced trials to get mounts. So we did like burden of the sun or something, brute justice. We did the brute justice one. We did the big one where Alexander is on like 4 legs, he's like the manipulator or whatever. We did Neo X Death. That was a fun fight, had never done that before. That was a really good one. And a bunch of like ruby weapon extreme runs just to get mounts. And
I want
and it
mounts
was a good time
from weapon. I want those are the dragons, right?
No, or they might be. They might be. Yeah.
So I really want those dragons.
But it was a really good time. I really like those activities. It's been a really good, like, kind of cool down because his work has gotten more and more intense leading into SGF in June and all that. It's really nice to have a game I can just kind of turn my brain off in. And that's been that. I will say, though, while I was traveling, I reinstalled, due to a friend of mine telling me about it, Marvel's Midnight Suns on my Steam Deck. I've been playing that on Steam Deck.
Does it work well on Steam Deck?
Yeah, it runs really. I mean, it doesn't look like it looks low settings, but it runs great. And it's like, you know, maybe it hitches frame rate wise every now and then, and it does kind of eat battery a little bit. I think I was getting like a 6-hour battery life. So I was having to charge my Steam Deck.
Are you an OG Steam Deck or an OLED?
Yes, OG Steam Deck.
OLED is a big improvement in a lot of respects, but
I'm waiting for version 2 to upgrade.
Makes sense. Yeah.
as much as I loved my Switch OLED upgrade, I don't use my Steam Deck as often as my Switch, and so I don't see the like benefit from either yet. But I will say that like Marvel's Midnight Suns is like an ideal Steam Deck game because it's so easy to just pick up and kind of do a day in, very much like Three Houses was that way for Switch, where it's like you can pick it up and you can do kind of a day or a week or whatever, or Persona the same way, where you can kind of take it as you go. But it segments that stuff up so well. There's so many good little story scenes. I love the character writing in that game. Honestly, a game that makes me not hate Tony Stark and is willing to even poke fun at the idea of Tony Stark. And I'm an Iron Man fan. This is the weird like dichotomy of Eric right now, is that like I really like Iron Man as a character. I also think like the Marvel-fication of Iron Man over the years kind of turned him into a different thing than what he was originally set out to be. And that kind of annoys me personally. That's a very long diatribe for another time. But I love the version of him that they have in Midnight Suns, where he's like totally the like doofy billionaire dude, but like kind of tries to act as like a father figure to like Peter and to Ghost Rider. They have like a great segment where you're kind of like hanging out in the chop shop with them, and Ghost Rider doesn't like want Tony Stark around because Tony's going to be like, you got to do everything perfect, you got to do it all right, we're going to bring in all this fancy tech, and Ghost Rider just wants to work on his car, you know, he just wants to hang out and listen to some tunes, drink some brewskis, like work on his car. Like they get all these personality types, and it's like what makes this stuff good. It's what made X-Men 97 when it came back so good, is they understood that like you got to tell a really good story, but you also got to have these characters interacting and present their personalities really up front, and then see what happens when they're together. Like it's all about the interhero friction, the bonding moments, the like tension between characters and their ideals, their outlooks versus others. I think Midnight Suns nails that so much. And then the card battling is actually really fun. So like, I think that is, if you have a Steam Deck, you need something to play on it. Marvel's Midnight Suns is fantastic. It was on sale the other week, I think, for like 11 bucks or something. And I was just sitting there like, there's no reason to not play this game. If you have sat there and you have wanted a good Marvel game and stuff like that, like Guardians of the Galaxy and Marvel's Midnight Suns are stellar. They're so good.
One of the more underrated games of the last few years, I would venture to say. Almost too good for this world. I don't even like superheroes that much, and I was into it. It's really well done. It's clear that Firaxis really went for it in terms of the mansion, exploring all of that aspects, the fully voiced cutscenes, all of the heroes working together. The battles are interesting. They're quite a small scale, I want to say, but they have that intimate kind of feel, like when you're fighting Venom and whatnot. It's pretty cool. And it's a different part of Marvel than you normally see. It has a different vibe from MCU just because it goes more into the horror comics kind of side of things, more magical characters. And I respect that. It's a shame that Jake Solomon, who was one of their best designers, was known for the XCOM series and everything. I understand why he wanted to go make something else. He started his own studio. He's working on a cozy sim now. He's working on like The Sims, basically. And I think
that sounds really good. I think that game will be great. Really, really good.
But yeah, there's also another part of me that's like, I want another XCOM. Give me XCOM 3. one day.
I was looking at that Capes game that just came out. People were saying that also looks all right. It's like a superhero XCOM that's much more like traditional XCOM, where you have like the grid and stuff like that. And I was kind of curious about that because Marvel's Midnight Suns, I would say, is more like half tactics, half card game, where you're kind of playing, you know, your cards, and everybody's got like different builds and ideas that you're trying to work around. But yeah, Midnight Suns just did not get the love I think it deserved. It was way too interesting, too novel, too like, it didn't have that mainstream appeal. But that's why I think it's really cool, is because it's not trying to do something that like everybody can just like pick up and immediately know, like, oh yeah, I've played a game like this before, but it's got a Marvel skin, great. Like, I'm that bores me. Whereas like, we made this really intricate dating sim card game that involves like all the heroes hanging out and doing stuff, like, yeah, I'm way more interested in that. That sounds cool.
It kept getting delayed, and there were questions about the Switch version. which never came out because it was way too ambitious for the Switch. And Take-Two clearly had no idea how to market this thing, which is not an uncommon thing for them, honestly. So
yeah,
it didn't get marketed very well. And I think it came out at kind of a weird time of the year. Like, I want to say it came out in December.
Yes. Yeah.
Which made it a little difficult because I think, yeah, it came out December 2nd. And I know that we were sort of post release window in a lot of ways. And I think a lot of the game sites were starting to look ahead to the holidays by that point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it just, so we were already focusing on all the games that had already come out that holiday season. And I remember that being a fairly good holiday season. So like we were playing God of War Ragnarok and stuff. And so Marvel's Midnight Suns just kind of got overshadowed, I think, which is really too bad, but a great shout, Erica. Fully recommend. Also, it says here that you saw Furiosa. Do we want to talk about that in the post show? Because I have thoughts. Can I
say one thing on the main show?
Sure.
So as part of this LA trip, I talked about it before we got on here. I went to go see Angel City FC. So I got to see, they were playing the San Diego Wave, and I got to see Alex Morgan, a football player.
Women's soccer, let's go.
Got to see her play live. That was fantastic. It was a great game. Had a great time. I also, the next day, we had done a press event for a thing I can talk about later. But after it ended, it was like, you know, middle of the afternoon, early evening, and we were like, okay, like everything's done. We're gonna go get dinner and drinks later tonight, maybe. We're like, one of my friends was like, hey, Furiosa is playing at the Chinese theater, like the theater in LA. We should just go. And we thought we were just gonna sit in like one of the IMAX theaters or whatever. We sat in the actual, like the Chinese theater, like the one that you go to, and it's the place from all the movies that you've always seen and stuff like that. And it was incredible. It was an amazing experience. We can talk about Furiosa in the post show. I think that's good post show content, but oh, like seeing a movie in that place was incredible. It felt like walking into film history. So that was very neat. If you ever have the chance to do so,
personality.
You just walk in. Like that's the wild thing is, I've seen it before. I always think of Blazing Saddles when I think of the Chinese theater, because that scene where Hedley Lamarr like goes in and like sits down to watch the end of the movie and then realizes they're like pulling up to the theater, and he's like, oh no, and he gets up to walk out and they're standing there. but it literally is, I never realized this, you walk in, there's a little concession stand, and then you just go around the side and it's just one theater. It's just one giant screen with like an auditorium full of rows, and it's just there. You just walk out to the theater. It's so cool. And you look up and there's all these like gorgeous paintings and like artwork and stuff like that. It feels like a place full of history, and it's really, really cool.
And you pay for your ticket at like a counter in the theater.
Reasonable price too. It was like theater ticket prices, but I thought it was going to get an even higher upcharge because it was, you know, the Chinese theater
Like
reasonable. Yeah. Yeah. So I went in, I got some popcorn. I usually don't eat popcorn at a movie, but I felt like I had to in this moment. That was the right thing to do. So I got a popcorn and a big Coke Zero and enjoyed myself a movie.
Good for you.
Nice. Two of my favorite movie theaters are here in San Francisco. One is down the block from me. It's the Alameda Theater. Beautiful old theater from the 1920s that was fully restored in 2008. And they have a historic theater that is really fun to watch movies in. And that's where I saw Furiosa as well. And then also there's the Castro Theater in the Castro District. And one of the best movie going experiences I ever had was seeing Milk, which was about Harvey Milk, the gay icon, first gay elected official ever. He was elected in San Francisco to represent the Castro and the Haight. And it was right when I had first moved to San Francisco. I was sitting in this historic Castro theater, watching Milk, seeing scenes that had been filmed in the Castro. It was like about San Francisco history. People were laughing along to all the San Francisco references. And that was the first time that I ever actually felt like I was living in the city properly. And it was not during Pride. I think it was right around the Oscars when Milk was up for Best Picture. Really, really memorable movie going experience for me, and really and sort of endeared the city and its history to me in my heart. So happy Pride, that's everybody. Nice. Nadia, what have you been playing?
As I put down on the forum, just I've been playing Thousand Year Door nonstop, and I'm getting closer to the end. I just got Admiral Bobbery, who's a Babom. And God, Nintendo just loves giving tragic stories to Babombs. I don't know what's why they blow up.
They're
so
naturally tragic characters. Yeah.
They kind of are. Yeah, it's like, well, no,
I mean,
it's,
every character dies, but
the thing with Babombs, I think the way they're depicted is that, like, you know, they just blow up and they come back, and I think they insinuate that teenage Babombs tend to go off more than adults because they're stupid and young. But no, it's just a great game. It's so funny. Like, for me, Thousand Year Door is like one of the best written RPGs of all time. I'm just always laughing. There's always something great going on. Battle system is a lot of fun and uses like all the characters. I just got Vivian, so I like Vivian very much. And yeah, really enjoying myself. That's really all I've been playing. Even Final Fantasy XIV, like Eric said, it's a great game if you need to put it down for a bit and you need to go back. Like, it's very easy to get back into, except everything in my store is going to be, like, you know, taken off the charts, and my animals are going to be really mad at me, but they'll get over it. So, yeah, Mario all day, every day.
And that's it for the tavern. Nadia, take us home.
I have kind of a weird story, like, I guess it fits in with Pride. When I was in grade 2 or 3, it will surprise you very much to learn that I was very messy with my writing, my drawing, my everything. And the teachers gave us a assignment, you know, draw a Canadian nature scene, you know, like snow, caribou animal, you know, just stuff like that. So everyone kind of goes and gets a ruler to draw their ground. And I'm like, I can't be bothered with rulers. I'm not doing this shit. So I drew a bumpy ground, freehand. And, you know, I put in some animals and I put in some trees. I did like to draw. I just was, you know, not great with following in the lines and whatnot. So we hand in our drawings, and I see everyone has this like perfectly straight ground because they all bothered with rulers, and I'm like, oh crap, I'm gonna get in trouble, aren't I? And the teacher, sure enough, holds up my picture, and I'm like, oh, here we go. And she's like, you know, this is a great example of, you know, how you should view nature. See, the ground is very bumpy. It's like kind of like there's snow on there. It's nothing in nature is really straight. And so I'm like, oh, phew, thank God. I just, like, I did the right thing by being a lazy asshole. But, you know, it actually kind of made me think, even back then, like, nothing in nature is really binary. Nothing is one, nothing is zero. Not to say you can't have people on those ends of the spectrum, but there's a whole thing in between. It's just, yeah, this year I kind of realized I'm genderqueer, and I always have been genderqueer, and that was a very interesting realization. And like a lot of people who played Final Fantasy XIV and played a female character and realized, oh, I think I'm trans, I kind of got to thinking, like, when I play RPGs, I always play a male character, and I always wonder to myself, like, what does that mean? Like, obviously it's saying something about me if I always go for the male character. Like, am I trans? And I'm like, no, I'm not really trans. I don't really have that feeling. Like, I do feel like a woman, like, you know, just like a assigned woman at birth. I never had a conflict with that. My conflict was with being expected to act like what society considers a straight female. Like, makeup and the certain clothes. And there's like, I think, one picture of me in a dress, and I was 3 years old. And after that, my parents were not getting dresses on me anymore. And, you know, I didn't really play with girl toys, quote unquote, but didn't really play with boy toys either, quote unquote. I liked animal toys. I liked gender neutral things. And so for years, my entire life, I've been like this. And then finally, I realized, oh, there's a name for it. You know, genderqueer. I feel like I have, you know, I do feel like a woman, but I do have this, you know, kind of male presence in me. And frankly, it's actually really great to have if you want to be a writer, because I think I have a good voice in me for writing a male character as well as female character and everything in between. So, yeah, it's who I am. It doesn't really change who I am. I still like to be addressed by she and her. Nothing really new there. And yeah, I just wanted to point out that, you know, it's all hormones. You make a cake and you have a recipe, and you, even if you measure everything every single time, you're just not going to get the same amount in there. It's physically, scientifically impossible. So I don't know, if you look at the world around you, nature isn't straight, so people aren't either. And happy Pride.
Thank Hell you yeah. for sharing that, Nadia. That was actually a really wholesome nook.
Oh no. Also, I killed a bunch of people this week. No, I killed them 10 years ago. This is nostalgic. I ate the bodies. You'll never find them. Bones and all.
And that's it for Acts of the Blood God. Thank you so much for listening. And thank you so much for your generous support of the podcast. If you want to join our Discord, join our community, listen to the show ad-free, get lots of bonus content, patreon.com/bloodgodpod. We're heading into the Acts of the Blood God post-show now, where we may be doing a little bit of our review of Furiosa, among other things. So come on and join us. We'll be joined by our lovely Stars of Destiny, who are currently over in the Discord. And this week we're joined by Amy, Anthrax Bees, Criminal Justice, or one of our intrepid mods, Drew RWX, Flashback 2012, Harvest Lunatic, Mango Alts, Spirus, and Stargazer. Thank you so much for your generous support. Next week, we'll be back to talk about, oh boy, here we go, Summer Game Fest and Xbox and Ubisoft Forward and all of that jazz. So you can look forward to that. We'll also be doing our Pantheon of the Blood God special on 13 Sentinels Aegis Rim, where you can get my final thoughts on this one, and we can decide whether it deserves to go in the RPG Pantheon. Please look, expect the voting to happen soon. And the monthly game thread is now up for Wizardry Proving Grounds of the Mad Overlord. So go help out, go play. JB has a lot of tips for you. I'm looking forward to getting into it. That'll be a fun game to play on the road in June. It'll probably be really frustrating and terrifying because I can barely get through Etrian Odyssey, let alone Wizardry. So dungeon crawling time, folks. You asked for it, you're gonna get it. All right. Heading to the Acts of the Blood God post show now, I've been your host, Kat Bailey. Thanks for so much for listening. And until next time, for Nadia, Eric, and myself, thanks for listening and happy adventuring.
In Kefka we trust!